This podcast is offered by Wildflowers and Sangha. A Dharma Talk by Roshi Amy to SLR Hollowell.
So, this is our second full day of retreat. Yesterday, for those who were not present, I had said that I would not speak, and yet I ended up speaking briefly and then taking questions. And what I told you yesterday was just a little bit about framing the retreat in terms of your everyday life and your practice life. And I gave the image of the horizontal being the everyday life and the vertical being the practice life. And then, as Tiago pointed out, using the image of the cross, where the two meet is where we realize practice is life and life is practice. And so the question is, well, where is that point where the two meet, right? And we have a lot of techniques about how to approach that. We have stories that address that in the Zen tradition, a lot of koans. One of the more famous ones is the Nansen, the teacher of Joshu, saying ordinary mind is the way, the Tao, to use the Chinese word. And it basically comes back to that, but the question is, well, what is ordinary mind, and how do we attain to ordinary mind, or how do we arrive at ordinary mind? What do we mean by ordinary mind? There is another story of the Buddha's most devoted disciple, who was also his cousin, Ananda. And he followed the Buddha when the Buddha started his community and became his assistant for 40 years until his death, until the Buddha's death. And then after the Buddha had died, before the Buddha died, Ananda was present for all of the teachings. He knew all of the teachings by heart. He could recite them all. If anyone wanted to know, had a question about what the Buddha had said about a certain subject in a certain place, Ananda knew. And he could recite the sutras after the Buddha's death. He could recite the sutras by heart, forwards and backwards. And he knew all of the intricacies of the teachings. And yet when, after the Buddha had died and the disciples gathered together to decide what they should do, how they should continue, what kind of community they should develop, how they should continue the teachings, the senior disciples got together and Ananda was not invited to attend. And he was very upset, and the leader of these disciples, who is considered the first successor of the Buddha, Maya Kashyapa, explained to Ananda that he hadn't yet realized it. He hadn't yet realized ordinary mind, if we want to stay with our Zen terminology. And that's why he wasn't invited. And Ananda was devastated. And while the others were meeting, determined to sit and realize it so that he could attend. So all night long, he stayed up, sitting, meditating as hard as he could, struggling, doubting, weeping, sweating, everything you can imagine. And finally, as dawn arrived and the meeting was about to occur, he gave up. He said, "I can't, this is not happening. I can't do this." And he gave up. And at that moment, in the Indian esoteric version, he manages to slip under the door. In the more prosaic Zen version, we would say he was admitted. He had great awakening at that moment or something. At the moment when he dropped it. However, he could not have dropped it if he hadn't gone through all of that seeking, all of that hardship. It wasn't that he dropped, it wasn't that he gave up, resigned. It's that he gave up looking for something other than himself, let's say. And this ties in with what I was saying about the ordinary mind. It's not, sometimes we think it's, you say ordinary mind is the way. You say, okay, then it's just what we usually do. We don't have to, we still just go wash the dishes and take the letter to the post office and reboot our computer and dust off the bookshelves, whatever it is we need to do. It is that, but it isn't that. Ananda could have told us that, right? He knew, he had all of the knowledge. He had studied all of the texts. He could say them backwards and forwards. He knew everything the Buddha had ever said. But experientially, he hadn't experienced it for himself. Maybe because he had been so focused on being the Buddha's attendant, and he needed to let go of that position of serving the Buddha in order to see himself. Maybe, we don't know. You can interpret that story however you want. We become very attached to who we think we are, how we think the world is, how we think our life is, what we think our life would be if we were enlightened, just to use the big term. And that's exactly what keeps us from realizing it. Keeps us from realizing that our life as it is the way. But not our life like we think it is. That's the trick. So we set up these techniques, we set up this format to help us realize that. But the technique in itself, the format in itself, doesn't do it. It involves you. You have to put in work. You have to sit. You have to seek. You have to look. If you weren't seeking, you probably wouldn't be here. You may not know what you're seeking for, but you wouldn't be sitting here if you weren't already seeking. We have all kinds of images that we use to describe it or to illustrate it. Yesterday when Tiago gave the example of the cross, he said that my Dharma brother Frank had used the word mundane to describe the horizontal line of the cross. And that's actually a good word, because mundane comes from the Latin or Old French of the world. So the worldly world, what we know, what we taste, what we smell, what we touch, the worldly world. I don't know if in Portuguese it's a similar word. It's the same world, it has a different word for it, though. But mundane, I don't know if it translates into Portuguese. In any case, it's a good word for that horizontal line. And the vertical line, I don't know if, I think maybe the word Frank used was spiritual. I don't know. Because in a tradition like the Christian tradition, it would be temporal and spiritual. Temporal being mundane and spiritual. Or worldly and otherworldly. Problem with otherworldly is it makes it sound like it's another world. But it's not. And the thing about spiritual is it comes from, its etymology is from breath. So it's something that's unseen. You can't see it. The mundane we see. Breath we don't see. We experience it. We know it. We know when it's not there. This moment in which we're living has been incredible. That this symbol of breath has been so present, both in terms of the pandemic, the one of the major problems with the disease, with the virus, is loss of breath, and I can tell you about that personally. And then, of course, with the one of the other major issues of our time, with this, the issues of discrimination and bias and racism, has been this rallying cry of "I can't breathe," because someone was killed because they couldn't breathe, and that's how they died. So breath is fundamental to our life, and yet we don't see it. And the entire mundane aspect, the worldly aspect, functions because of breath. If there were no breath, there would be no mundane aspect. So if there were no spiritual, or as Sei was telling us, mundano, there would be no mundane. The two are intimately connected. And to focus only on one is to miss the whole. The question that arises always is, well, so how do they meet and how do they interact? José Eduardo sent me a link to a documentary recently about a physicist, one of the great thinkers of our time, David Bohm, who I've only watched half of the documentary for the moment, but that is the question, is how do these two aspects of life interact and function together? These aspects of mechanics, quantum mechanics in physics, and the theory of relativity, and what we can see and what we can't see, how do they function together? The macro and the micro, however you want to call it. And in our Zen practice, we don't even really go into all that. We don't really care about all of that. What we care about is the experience. And that great thinker, David Bohm, his great thinking, at least from the first half what I've seen, came from his experiences. It came from his intuitive, experiential life that he looked into certain issues. And I don't know about his greatest breakthroughs, but you discover that. And This is the same for all of us. And the Buddha said this. Don't believe what I'm telling you. He may have said that to Ananda many times. Don't believe what I'm telling you. Find out for yourself. And the way we find out by ourselves is getting up off of our cushions and going into our lives. Of course, we need to sit on our cushion. That's the essential basic practice. That's why we set up a retreat like this, so that we intensely plunge into that sitting practice, which stabilizes and clears our mind, so that when we then stand up and go into the world, we can better see, experience the interactions of these two, the horizontal and the vertical, let's say. We have more of a chance of it. Because the only place we can experience it is in our mundane world. Our mundane world might be sitting on the cushion, because that's the physicality of it. But we can't experience the interaction anywhere else. It has to be experienced here and now in this mundane world. So all of that is more blah, 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 adding to the limitless libraries of thought, speech, and books. As an incitement to maybe look differently at your life. In the famous koan of Ordinary Mind is the Way, Joshu, the student of Nansen, asks him, what is the Tao? What is the way? And often we think of it as he's saying, which way should I go? Should I take the A7 or the A6? You know, it's like looking at the map function on your telephone and finding out which road to take. That's not really the question he's asking, Joshu. Because the Tao, the way, we translate it as the way, but the Tao in Chinese was how the Chinese had translated from the Indians all these words like nirvana, Satori, Sunyata, Bodhi, all of these esoteric Indian terms. The Chinese, they don't function like that. And they just use the word Tao, which does mean a way, a passage, in fact. But it's something greater than that. More like, what is life, or something, Joshu's question. And if we interpret Joshu's question of what is the way in meaning like, which road should I take? And Nansen responds, ordinary mind, then we become confused and we think, oh, I should just follow my ordinary thoughts and that's the way. But it's actually much bigger than that, what Nansen is saying. The Tao is bigger than just that. It's not just which highway should I take. It's what is it? It's like there's a commentary on this koan. They tell a story about a Japanese ship that had come into an estuary somewhere. But that was the mouth of the river was 100 miles wide, 100 kilometers wide, and so the ship didn't realize that they were no longer in the ocean. And in the distance, they saw another ship, a British ship, and they signaled to this other ship, saying, "Can you give us water? We're out of water." And they didn't know when they would be coming to the shore. And the British ship messaged back and saying, saying, just put lower your buckets into the river. The Japanese ship didn't realize that they were in fresh water and they could just lower their buckets into the water. They thought they were in the ocean. They didn't realize they were in the middle of it already. They were already there. So the question that Joshua is asking is, what is the Tao? And Nansen is responding, you're already there. You're already it. It's not some special mind. It's not somewhere else. But you have to, the Japanese ship had to ask the question in order to be able to lower their buckets into the water, right? Joshu continues, though. He doesn't quite see it. And he said, well, if I, what does he say? If I go towards it. No, he said, should I direct myself towards it? When Nansen says, ordinary mind is the way. And Nansen says, if you direct yourself towards it, you go away from it. Because you're separating yourself from your ordinary mind. So if you try to do something special and make your life something special, separate your life out from your practice, you're going away from life as practice and practice as life. This is natural, we do this all the time. You say, oh yes, okay, I'm washing the dishes, this is not Zen. Bernie Glassman encountered this when he started a bakery so that they could help the homeless, feed the homeless, but also create housing and jobs for the homeless people. And a lot of people in his community said, this is not Zen, and they left. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Bernie's vision was, though, that it was larger than that. That was Zen. And he tried to help people see that. Responding to the situation is Zen. We have a less radical practice because we still have a strong sitting practice. And yet, we are not limited by where we sit and how we sit and the forms that we use for that sitting. And that the reason that I teach that is because that's my way. That's my ordinary mind is the way. You each have to find what your ordinary mind is the way is. Everything that I've tried to create and put in place for us has that in mind. And it's really as simple as, you know, right now I'm hot, so I'm going to take off my sweater. It's really responding to the situation as it is. I think I don't really have anything else to say about that for the moment. Are there questions or comments? I'm sure it's confusing, but I'm willing to hear what you have to say and respond. So yet, use that hand function again if you if you click on participants and then you see the raise hand function. You can also tell us how your day was yesterday or how it's been today. Share anything you want. Sue. You need to unmute.
Okay. Horizontal lines and vertical lines also in the Rakuzu.
Yeah.
The same meaning.
Yeah. Actually, I hadn't thought about that, but so you see that that the vertical is the
was a question for me.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, it could be, and I might have a question for Anna who does weaving. I don't know in the loom if it's like that too. If you know, if the horizontal line is similar to the worldly world, and if the vertical is similar to the spiritual. I don't know, but that's an interesting question.
What I can say is that.
Could you come closer? Yeah.
What I can say about that is that if we focus in the vertical. Traditionally, in the vertical lines in the loom, there is much more rituals and sayings when we put the vertical lines, because they are the very beginning. So if this beginning is not settled, everything will be very, very difficult and entangled. So traditionally, I don't know about factories, but when we do it by hand, the vertical is the very beginning. So that it must be settled. That doesn't mean that one can be very
stretched.
One can be very stretched and the other can be not stretched. This can happen, but settled. The stretch and the not stretch is not stretched. Then the horizontal must be chosen. In function of this vertical. So it's true that the vertical says what's going on after.
And so does the horizontal, we weave the horizontal through the vertical?
Sorry?
Do we weave the horizontal thread through the vertical threads?
It can be through, it can be under, it can be diagonal, whatever you want. But
very interesting.
The truth of the vertical is what I said. The truth is going to condition it, what you're going to choose for the horizontal.
Yeah, makes sense, huh? Lisa has her hand up physically on the screen, but
it's just a question. When you start with the Rakuzu, do you start with a vertical. I haven't done a requisite, obviously.
Would someone like to say something about that?
I was thinking the first pieces, yes, they are vertical, but immediately we have to fold them and immediately we have horizontal lines. So I guess we never have just the vertical without anything else. You just don't do anything with just the vertical piece of cloth. You have to immediately get horizontal lines.
Yeah, it works. It goes together.
Yeah,
can't be just vertical or just horizontal.
Thank you, everybody.
Maybe, as with the example of the hakusu, when you're in any given moment, when you're involved with your life, even that is a dualistic term, say involved with your life, you're not thinking about horizontal and vertical. It doesn't make any sense. But as Nansen says, when you know it, there is no doubt. When you experience the perfect functioning of the two, there is no doubt. Or as Confucius, the famous Confucius quote that I always give, we have two lives. The second begins when we realize that we only have one. So Alberto is sharing something with all of us. If everything I experience is a reflection of my mind, and when I find that what I call the mind is empty, I search and do not find, according to the concepts in where everything can arise without existence, which we call real, some questions arise. Is this the union of what we call relative and absolute? Not quite sure I understand the text. Everything I experience is a reflection of my mind. And when I find that what I call the mind is empty, I search and do not find, according to the concepts, and where everything can arise without existence, which we call real. So I guess I might ask you, Alberto, what do you mean by empty? In that.
Emptiness.
And how would you define that?
I can see nothing when I try to find what we call mind.
So when you...
It's like doesn't exist.
Ah. So the question is then, well, when we talk about this, we're not talking about existing or not existing. Whenever the Buddha was asked, does something exist or not exist, he didn't answer. That's not the question. And when you say you can't see anything, All that means is you can't see anything.
Yeah.
So that's more.
But I can experience that. I can see anything.
Right. And when you experience that you can't see anything, you're saying that you experience that as emptiness?
I think I experience a quality of the mind.
Hmm.
What can be the quality of the mind?
And so right now, at this moment, how is mind? Can you bring me your mind right now? Can you show me it? We've already had this conversation. You know?
Yeah. I can find it. I just can experience it.
Right. Just this.
I'm not finding it. Yeah. It's like we experience the duality bit. She's not exist, but it's not easy to realize it.
And so, you know, what about this cup?
This is a reflection of, I can see. So, she is real or not real?
See, I think when we venture into...
Construction of mind or reflection that I can see. But she really exists, is difficult to say.
Again, I guess I would ask you to look into what you mean by exist or not exist. And the question of, is this the union of what we call relative and absolute? We say the absolute and the relative fit together like a box and its lid. They're actually not two. Those are just functions of mind that says there's two things. There's not.
Yeah.
And of course, they're useful. It's useful to have those terms at certain times, but it's not to. So for you, I would say look into your question of existing or not existing. I don't see any blue hands, but I see some hands raised in screens, so.
I suggest that Alberto says in Portuguese what he wants to say, and then somebody could translate, maybe, if you want. If he wants.
Oh, okay, I can do it.
Alberto, diz em português, e aqui o João traduz, diz o essencial. Pronto, se quiseres.
Sim, pronto, aquilo que eu pretendia, a reflexão que eu estava a partilhar com as pessoas, é, quando nós no processo de prática, digamos assim, podemos usar naturalmente várias técnicas para fazer ou até não utilizar nenhuma. E um dos exercícios que eu faço com alguma frequência é... como é que eu vou explicar? É tentar olhar para a própria mente, tentar fazendo uma prática analítica ou não, nenhum tipo de análise, simplesmente tentar olhar para dentro, se assim se possa dizer. E quando eu digo que não encontro nada, eu não encontro nada. Quando eu digo que se vejo alguma coisa, não vejo nada. No entanto, eu tenho a capacidade de experienciar essa questão de não ver nada, não encontrar nada. E daí surgir aquilo que eu diria que seria a união entre aquilo que nós chamamos conceitualmente relativo ou absoluto. esta perspectiva do, relativa de querermos ver as coisas, da experiência que nós temos, ou que dizemos que temos, e ao mesmo tempo verificarmos que aquilo que realmente se calhar experienciamos como real não é assim mesmo. Neste momento não consigo explicar de outra maneira. Não sei se o João apanhou o essencial e pode trazer às pessoas.
So in
experiência muda.
So in sitting practice we can use different sorts of techniques or we can use none. What I usually do is look at the mind, trying to look at the mind. And the experience for me is that I cannot find it. But I am aware, in a way, that I have that experience of not finding it. É correto, Alberto?
Sim, isso. Está correto. Muito obrigado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's more or less what I understood from the question. Yeah. Miguel is raising his hand as well.
It comes to my mind as we speak about this, and Alberto mentioned emptiness and the cross and the ordinary mind, that the vertical line is emptiness and the horizontal life is interdependence. Emptiness is interdependence. There's no emptiness by itself. It's this, but this doesn't exist by itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what, you know, when you say form is emptiness and emptiness is form, that's implying that that it's not two, and that emptiness manifests as form, and the nature of form is emptiness, and that where they meet is right here, that we are where the horizontal and the vertical meet. You are it, as my name is. You are that. You are it. Lara is asking, if everything is done, why does nothing tell us to come away? Well, because we don't see that everything is done. And we don't understand what that means. And he's not telling us to find our way, saying, he's, you know, indicating that the way is ordinary mind. You know, I give the example always, I exist as to serve you and be an example, in the sense that when I went and lived with my teacher, my life did not change. I had children, I had a job, I had a husband, everything. And when I left that community after living there for 6 years, the same thing was true. But it was not. It was transformed. I did not experience it in the same way. The famous mountains are mountains and rivers are rivers. And then at a moment, we let go of our notions of mountains and rivers, and a mountain is not a mountain and a river is not a river. And then, eventually, we come back on the, so the first point would be the worldly world, mountains, mundane, mountains are mountains, rivers are rivers, the horizontal. Second, mountains aren't mountains, rivers aren't rivers, would be the vertical. emptiness. It's not what we say it is. And then the third is where the two meet. Mountains are mountains and rivers are rivers, but not like they were before, because we've realized their emptiness. We've realized they're not what we think they are. The same applies for our life. Joanna is raising her hand, and I think this will have to be the last question. Sorry.
Hello. During your talk, you said this before, the words, and I don't recall the words, but it says something about nothing special, about our life being special as it is, something in those lines. And it hit me, because it's so hard to realize that that's really special the way it is. That you said something like, you don't have to make your life something special, and it's so hard to believe. Like, you share this story about being devastated about that, but it's really something very, not that I have been through what you have, but at that moment it struck me, like, in a small way, but it still hit me. But it's something so, it's so experiential, like, you have to experience to, but what is that? And how can I be sure I'm really experiencing it, that? Because it's so hard to convey, to talk about it. And you said it, like, you're always talking about the same thing. You call it so many different names. You call it love, emptiness, and still it's so hard to realize it. It's hard for me to accept that my life as it is doesn't have to be nothing special to be as special as it can be, or as it already is. And still it's not special it's not like a birthday party special. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, when you truly do realize it, you realize how special it is. When you realize how it's not special, it's how special it is, and how beautiful it is, and how precious and singular, because each of us has this beautiful, singular jewel of life. And that's the only reason why I'm sitting here, so that to encourage you to look for that and find it for yourselves. So I guess we will end there. And we'll see you this afternoon, late usual time.